the sequencing from yesterday to today was adjusted because we didn't finish 37, but what I wanted to do this morning is we'll start and just do a summary review and then complete some of the messages that make 37 complete. Review is good because the subject matter is lengthy, subtle, complex, puzzling. So even with review, there most likely will still be some puzzling. So Prabhupada gave a nice instruction when he first, 1970, he printed BDT notes, ISKCON Press then, printed Nectar Devotion. It was for his new disciples. Very elevated subject matter. It was difficult to understand. And so Prabhupada was getting many questions. And Prabhupada's general message to the devotees, if you don't understand, read it again. And after reading again, if you still don't understand, read it again. And continue reading again and again, and gradually you'll understand. So similarly, this is amongst the subject matters of bhakti. The proper understanding of the relationship of the topmost standard, Radha and Krishna's loving relationship, it requires enormous qualification, which we don't have. And so if we try to enter into the subject matter with a dull brain into something that requires laser precision, then we'll get puzzled. So don't just ponder over it like you might, you know, a math problem or a crossword puzzle or something like that. It's not that kind of a subject matter. So just, okay, now we'll begin to review. A little review is the previous set of verses had two important conclusions. Amongst others, one was attaining the lotus feet of Krishna is the goal, and the means for that is through devotion to Krishna, atma bhakti, and by that devotion to Krishna then one can attain him and understand him as fully as a tiny living entity can understand something unlimited. But to that degree we can understand Krishna. With that connecting thought, next section of verses, 36, 37, 38, are on the higher stages of bhakti. So, 36 was bhava bhakti, in general, and specifically as one attains bhava bhakti, then one begins to get some indication of one's rasa, or one's eternal relationship with Krishna, including all the paraphernalia and ornaments and all the residence and all of those things, the details of one's eternal relationship with Krishna. One has yet to attain it, but one gets some indication. And then so the varieties of rasas are discussed. This verse 37 is specifically focused on one of those five main rasas, namely Shringara Rasa. And Shringara Rasa has, it's like the queens of Krishna in Dwarka. That's also Shringara Rasa or conjugal rasa. But then there's the gopis in Vrindavan. And the gopis in Vrindavan have a different kind of love for Krishna. And that's the subject, Radha, and her extensions or expansions of her very self, the gopis, and their feelings of love for Krishna. So, those of you that have a book, open your book. What we're going to do, this is review. I'm not, rather than going through the PowerPoint images, we're just going to go through the book, at least parts of it. And let us try to understand what Bhaktisiddhanta is trying to convey to his reader. So the first sentence of his purport: Radha and Krishna, eternally separated as two forms, are one entity. We heard that before. He's stating it again. And it's important. That's why it's the lead statement of the whole 12-page purport. Two forms, one entity. That's a contradiction, apparently. But it's not in the spiritual realm. She is his Ladini Shakti. So then he goes into this language, and I'm going to keep it as simple as possible. In the science of rasa, because this is Madhurya rasa or Shringara rasa, in the science of rasa, there is the person who is holding love for another, and then there's the other feelings of love towards another. And of course, in relationship, those feelings that alternate back and forth, feeling towards one, and so forth. Like a conversation, one speaks, another will listen, hopefully, and then that person that's listening will speak, and the one that was speaking will listen, and that's the dialogue. The relationship of love is like that. Lover and beloved alternate. So, generally we speak of Radha as the abode of love, and Krishna as the object of love. It's important to bear in mind Krishna has love for Radha, or Krishna has love for us. Very important. But we'll just for now speak of the Radha, because as he does, Radha is that abode of love. Ashraya is the word, is the Sanskrit term, and the object of love is Vishaya. So there's the object of love within, we saw in one of the slides yesterday, this Shringara Rasa is already within both Radha and Krishna. So there's then stimulation of that love, that particular feeling of love for one another. And those stimulations of love are called Udipana. So then he goes, after explaining that, he writes about halfway down the page of the purport, the first page of his purport, the gopis are the facsimile ashraya of that rasa. I find it fascinating that, you know, his language is such, you know, there weren't fax machines. There wasn't faxes at the new an abbreviation for facsimile. But his language is so precise. The gopis are facsimile of Radha, that position of Ashra. So they're expansions of her. There's persons, they're not like zombies or, you know, holograms or something. They're persons, but they're expansions of her, of the same tattva, Shakti tattva. They're not living entities like we're living entities. Some that we're going to, somebody asked last night or yesterday, can jiva souls also be in the position of gopis? Answer, yes. But this is speaking of those nitya-siddha gopis, perfect souls, perfect in their love for Krishna. They are expansions of her. And they're also in the category of ashraya, the devotee of love, feeling love for Krishna. As Radha does, they do. And then 2.5 pages of the Nija Rupataya. Look in the purport. It's written. Nija Rupataya means, quote, with the attributes manifested from the ecstatic energy, unquote. Nija Rupataya. In a word for word, it's really interesting. Anyway, I like it. I'll just share this. Nija Rupataya is with his own form. With his, that's Krishna's or Govinda's form, with his own form is what? Is Radha. And it's Radha who is with his own form that has these 64. And these 64 are what makes up the Vadini Shakti. And it's those 64 that stimulate the love between Radha and Krishna. In this case, the love of Krishna for Radha. But Krishna has the same 64. So when he exhibits some of these 64, or one of them, or a combination of them, or whatever, it stimulates her love for him. Because it's already within him and within her. It's stimulated, so it's part of rasa. So she does these 64 things. And when she does these 64 things, or any of them, Krishna feels happiness of rasa, of loving attraction for Radha. Not just like, hey, she's cool, she can really cook nicely. It's just, it's not like that. It's not mundane. It's a transcendental stimulation. Well, he's really good food there. Woo woo. Not like that. It's a stimulation of ecstatic love. And I thought to, we're not going to read them all, but just some details. If you look over on the next page, money, raga, jnana. The art of tinging jewels. She knows how to, you know, jewels have a certain color. She can make them appear to be a different color. That's tinging. Go over to number 47. Akshara, mushtika, kankana. Art of talking with letters and fingers. It's not just like sign language, you know, someone's deaf and they speak with their fingers. What it means is one can look at a book that's not even open and you know what it says. I'm reading Bhaktisiddhanta, it's one thing, you read the book and what is he saying? Just look at the book and you know what it says. It's mystical. Or telling what is within a hand without seeing what's in the hand. Now I know a devotee who knows the art and he demonstrates it. And it's, you know, it's fascinating. Like, how did he do that? You know, so it's in this case it's not, anyway. For one of us to do it's something material, for Radha to do, not. And similarly, you know, things including carpentry and the care of animals and so the whole list is it's fascinating. So she has all these. Art of using children's toys. Art of enforcing discipline. Art of gaining victory. Art of awakening master with music at dawn. These same 64 things, if you read Krishna book carefully or the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, When Krishna went to the school of Sandipani Muni, the same 64, he didn't need to go to school to learn them, but it's a lila where he learned them. Just like Durvasa Muni giving Radharani the benediction about cooking. She doesn't eat Durvasa Muni's benediction. She's eternally been preparing things. Imagine, you know, since the beginning of eternity, whenever that is, whatever she cooks, she never cooks the same thing twice. And it never tastes the same. Quite a repertoire. But that's Srimati Radharani. She doesn't like, she's not just, she's a good cook. You get the idea. So these are stimulations of, this is the Udipan. And the gopis, those who are the Nitya Siddha gopis, they're eternally manifesting some portion in different combinations. And it's natural, like Prabhupada expresses. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. Have you heard that one from Prabhupada before? Variety is the mother of enjoyment. I'm concerned sometimes when people say, you know, what preparation would you like? I'm afraid to say what it is because that's all I'll get for the next year. Oh, he likes that. But, you know, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So, it's not just Krishna and Radha, but variety. She expands, and this gopi does this thing, that gopi does that thing, another gopi, but they're all capacities of Radha. But it's expanding his pleasure. It's really, really wonderful. And just take it a step further, living entities. What's the purpose of living entities? Like, why do we exist? Well, you could say, why not? But why we exist is for increasing the pleasure of Krishna. That's why we exist. We can forget that's the reason for our existence and do something else, and neither is that pleasing to Krishna nor is it pleasing to us. There's no happiness outside of that for the pleasure of Krishna, purpose of our existence, serving Krishna. Serving Krishna with love. That's our purpose of our existence. We act in harmony with our purpose of our existence. Then we're happy. Just thinking of that, the group of Chinese students that were doing their, what do you call it?
Internship.
And, you know, their expression at the end of spending 1 year interning with Vedic Vision. Was it with the Vedic Vision? Or was it with you?
ISKCON Chicago.
Huh? ISKCON Chicago. ISKCON Chicago, okay. So their expression was, what I learned through this year of association of interning is I really need a goal of life. And it's not just make money. The last fellow spoke very bluntly. He said, come on, let's be honest. We're here, Chinese people in general, and we're here at this institute to get money. We want to get an education so we can get a good job so we can get money. And now I understand that, you know, money isn't everything. I need a goal and purpose of life. I don't know yet what that is. But I know I need one. And they all said the same thing. Because there was a commitment to not proselytize, not use the internship as a medium for, you know, indoctrinating people with Hare Krishna theology. So it was honored. But, you know, their conclusion was, I need a goal of life. So then, okay, well, if you like, we can, now it's, now that this is over, we can, you can join our Bhagavad Gita class. And these you can explore if that's something that makes sense to you, the goal of life. So, living entities may forget, in this material world, we forget. And we need to be reminded of what we've forgotten. What's that? Who are we? What's the goal of life? What's it all about? What is the purpose? Just like this, you know, question, why creation? Why do we exist? You know, for one purpose, for Krishna's pleasure. Now, Krishna doesn't need anything. He's not a needy person. Jihan said, I need some happiness. He is full. But his fullness is also unlimited and never increasing. Like we said yesterday, not that the spiritual world is static, it's ecstatic. And it's ever increasing happiness. And Krishna wants our happiness too. So, the gopis have that capacity of love for Krishna and pleasing Krishna. So Krishna wants to please them, they want to please Krishna in the abode of love, Goloka. Then another, at the bottom of the page, very important and interesting sentence, the divine sportive potency fills the hearts of his paraphernalia with appropriate spiritual sentiments in conformity with the will of Krishna. No, again, Bhakti Siddhanta's language. We would say, Lila Shakti, you know, the potency of Krishna through which he performs his pastimes. So this pastime potency, or sportive potency, fills the hearts of whatever is there in Goloka. Because whatever is there in Goloka is conscious. The land is conscious, the tree is conscious, the rocks are conscious, the river is conscious, his flute is conscious. You know, there's not inanimate objects. There's not dull matter. But even his paraphernalia is conscious. So, message is, for the purpose of Krishna's pleasure, everything in the spiritual world is infused with this potency according to the will of Krishna to orchestrate Krishna's pleasure. Gopis included, and every other living entity included. That's Goloka. And our back to Godhead message is to go to that consciousness. When we go to that consciousness, we'll go to that place. The place is there for those who have that consciousness, where happiness of Krishna is what everyone is doing in complete harmony. The next section, right after that sentence, he starts another section where he speaks about the English word is visible and invisible, and then the Sanskrit is prakat and aprakat. And the distinction he's making is there's pastimes in Goloka. That's raising my hand in the air because it's Goloka, it's in the spiritual sky. And that's not manifest. We unless you're there, for us here, it's not manifest. And then there's his manifest pastimes. That's when he performs his pastimes here. Again, these, like the question Yuli asked yesterday, these are eternal pastimes. Sometimes they're manifest, sometimes they're not manifest, but they're eternal pastimes. So what is he doing now? He's doing what he does eternally. He's enjoying in varieties of pastimes. And those pastimes are of a particular bhava, or sentiment, or loving mood. And then there's variations on the theme of, because variety is the mother of enjoyment. An example of that comes to mind is in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where Narada Muni is describing Krishna subduing the Kaliya serpent. And then another one is Krishna's the encounter with Keshi is a horse, giant, vicious, demoniac horse, tries to come and kill Krishna. So in the Bhagavatam, Krishna kills Keshi. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he doesn't. He tames Keshi. And then he keeps Keshi in a corral or a place where you keep horses. And from time to time, with the cowherd boys, they go and play horsey. They ride Keshi, galloping around. Varieties on the theme, because variety, Krishna knows how to enjoy, and variety is the mother of enjoyment. So there's variations on the theme of, again, what is Krishna's doing now. There's varieties on the theme of, but in the spiritual realm, he's enjoying pastimes, same eternally. And from time to time, they're manifest for ordinary people, like, you know, anybody, us, to see. Very merciful. And in those same abodes, when he makes his pastimes, performs his pastimes, some have the vision, spiritual vision, that's, you know, the next verse 38, they can see those pastimes. And they can even enter into those pastimes from very qualified souls. And then all confidential subjects are understood by them very easily through the medium of bhakti that's matured. So then, so he's speaking of this aprakat and prakat, or unmanifested and manifested, and he spends about 2 pages explaining they're the same. Some people don't understand they're the same, and then he expresses that's a matter of their realization. But one who is realized, in realization is in proportion to the purification of the soul that comes from practice of devotion. As one becomes more purified, then one will understand there's actually no difference. There's no difference in the realm or the abode or the dham. There's no difference in the form. There's no difference in the pastime. These same three from the first verses that we discussed. So it's important to understand that point, so it takes 2.5 pages to do it in different, you know, ways. They're the same. Then he touches on, you know, it appears that they're different. Because, again, this was discussed in earlier verses, 3, 4, and 5. There's some pastimes here that do not take place there, at least apparently. Like the pastime of birth, the pastime of killing demons, the pastime of the marriage of the gopis. There's other. Like in Goloka, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. In Gokula, earthly pastimes, Krishna leaves Vrindavan. Another one. There's others. So in Goloka, there's the mood, the sentiment, that the hearts, by the arrangement of the yogamaya potency, the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan are infused with the sentiment of something that never happens. Oh, Krishna has left Vrindavan. Or he's going to leave Vrindavan. He has 2 terms. He refers to Jiva Goswami's writings, and Jiva Goswami has used this language, Vibrahma Vilas. Remember that term. Vibrahma Vilas. Vilas means joyous pastime, and Vibrahma means seeming error, like really mistaken. Vit, they mean very. Brahma, error, mistake, illusion. So, that Vit, Brahma, Vilas term applies for both the unmanifest and the manifest. I'll repeat some examples that we did yesterday, just so it's repetition that will help perhaps make it clearer. Number 3. Birth. In Goloka, there's no pastime of birth, but there's the sentiment of Yashoda and Nanda their son. How can they he be their son with no birth? Answer, Vidrama Vilas. They're invested with this sentiment of love that Krishna is their son. And here, the pastime of birth takes place. But what kind of birth is it? It's not the birth that we know about. He's not the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. How does he take his birth? We know the pastime. He appears in the pure mind of Vasudeva. Then he transfers himself to the pure mind of Devaki. And then he transfers himself. This isn't how birth takes place normally, or conception. And then he transfers himself to the womb of Devaki, and then after some time, he just steps out. And he's in a full-fledged human form, with a crown, and ornaments, and a fresh garland, and symbols of Vishnu. That's not birth. It's pastime. It's Vibhrama Vilas, both above and below. We could go for the same thing with the demons. We did this. No, there's no demons, but there's a sense of demons. Here there's demons. You know, and so it's Krishna kills the demons, and the demons then become liberated. So they're taking a position of text. Let's see. There's a later text about rasa. I think it's 52. Even those that are opposed to Krishna, those who are fearful of Krishna, those that are enemies of Krishna, Krishna is the source of that feeling in their heart. We'll see when we get there. But don't ask me much questions. It'll be covered. So it appears like demons, you know, they come and he kills them. They want to kill Krishna, and Krishna plays with them a bit and finishes them. He's liberating those souls who take that position in opposition to him. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, extensively they've written that these, sorry for another Sanskrit term, nainitika, or occasional pastimes, those that are not eternally going on in the spiritual world, but they're distinct for the material world, they're purposeful for us. There's a benediction or potency for us, conditioned souls, to become relieved of obstacles on our path to Krishna. That's a whole other subject, but there's a purpose behind those occasional pastimes, is the point. So now, the delicate one. Marriage of the gopis and Krishna's associating with someone else's wife. Goodness, that's immoral. However, the deeper understanding is being disclosed, so it's subtle. It's several things. These gopis are his own potency. Not just like they're his wife. You're like a man here will marry a woman, or a woman will marry a man. And that's husband and wife. And it's religious. They're being together is religious. And otherwise it's not. This isn't one of those. This is Krishna's own potency. And he's associating with his own pleasure potency. He can withdraw that pleasure potency, and then the pleasure potency is within. We discussed this in the last seminar, last Thanksgiving. Just like Mahavishnu, for example. Mahavishnu, his pleasure potency is within. So we never see Mahavishnu with his pleasure potency as two forms, because she's within. And he's enjoying yoga nidra, pastime with her within. Radha and Krishna, he's enjoying pastimes without. Two forms but one entity. Remember, that's how the whole purport begins. And the gopis are her expansions. So what's the question of something that's improper? It's more proper than religious marriage. There's no unwholesomeness. Those that don't understand that for want of association with those who are devotees, then they'll use their lens of material calculation and look at what Krishna's doing and go, bad. This is bad. Good and bad. It doesn't apply to the realm of absolutes. There's not good and bad. There's not duality in the realm of absolutes. Good and bad. Light and dark. Happy and sad. Just like the light and dark. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in the spiritual world, there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity. Because there, everything is self-luminous. Correct? Well, guess what? In Goloka, there's day and night. And there's a sun and there's a moon. And what's that all about? That's the internal potency of making arrangements for Krishna's pastimes. For example, it's in text 56, the last verse that we're going to be covering, Sunday night. The moon in Goloka is always a full moon. No phases of the moon. There's phases of the moon for us for a different reason. For Krishna, it's for his pastimes. So the full moon is, the moon is only a full moon. And so forth. You know, an empiric scholar, someone that's not a devotee, is going to hear all this and go, rubbish. These people, they're moody. Or something. Why would they? These are intelligent people. Why would they be interested in fairy tales? And it's not just us in this room. It's our great acharyas, Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Siddhanta and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all these super intelligent, brilliant people. Why are they going to be interested in fairy tales? Mythology, just, you know. Not interested. They're interested. And Shukadeva Goswami, why is he interested? Is it easy? You get the idea. It's not imaginative. It's, as he's saying several times in this purport, it's real. And it's disclosure of what's real. For those of us that have mundane conceptions, well, you know, there's some hesitation, maybe. You know, maybe we're not like vicious vilifiers of Krishna criticizing him, but maybe there's some trepidation of heart, some weakness of heart. How can it be like that? So the construct of Brahma Samhita is, before this discussion, we have those other four verses. How it is that Krishna is like he is, and so forth. And it's necessary, one of the things necessary is to understand he has unlimited inconceivable potencies, and sometimes he exhibits them and sometimes he withdraws them. And what's the purpose? His enjoyment. That's who he is. He's the supreme enjoyer. Well, how come he's, you know, anyway, if you're envious, you can say, well, he's self-centered. He's always been thinking of himself to be the enjoyer. And stupid things like that. He is the enjoyer. He's thinking of the enjoyment of all living entities, because all living entities are his. It's his enjoyment and their enjoyment. It's that's love. Worldly people can't understand those things. So let's go on to the purport. This is taking a long time for the review. He wants us to understand. Look at it on page 67. I don't know if your numbering is the same as mine. Those 64 arts, that's the first part of the paragraph, those 64 arts that have been enumerated above do in reality exist unstintedly only in the Goloka. Unwholesomeness, insignificance, grossness are found in those arts in accordance with the degree of self-realization on the part of the aspirants after the knowledge of the Absolute. So, if you're not a devotee, you'll see those arts and you go, you know, something. But that's in proportion to one's realization and one's state of purification through the means of this pleasure potency, or ecstatic potency, or ladini shakti, and the knowledge potency, which arouse bhakti and then allow one to understand what otherwise is inconceivable. At the very bottom of that page, Jiva Goswami, after mature deliberation, has established that the transcendental paramourship as Vibhramavala, something seemingly different from what it appears to be, such are the pastimes of birth, etc., accomplished by Yogamaya. Look, this paramourship is, there are several pages on what there's marriage and man and woman associated. There's without marriage, or even more extreme, someone who is married and I have a relationship with him or her outside of marriage. You know, lover on the side. Infidelity. And all those things that are in this world awful. And so this sentence we just read is Jiva Goswami is explaining or stating that paramourship of Krishna is Vibhramavilas. It's a sentiment of seeming error only. Both here and there, you know, Goloka and Gokula, both. And there's pages of difficult language in which he goes through explaining it. So I'm not going to go through the difficult language. It's something that, if you like, you can take your dictionary, go through it and read it probably 20 times until it's clear. But he's just explaining it again in a detailed fashion. It only seems to be. There are no husbands. There is no marriage. There's a sentiment that I have a husband, or she has a husband. There's no husband. So there's no violation. On yet another level, you know, the earlier one is like absolute. These are expansions of his own pleasure potency. Please. That's better than your marriage. In fact, Prabhupada's statement to this professor, I mentioned, it's written in Krishna book. He says, there are those that criticize Krishna for immorality because he's associating with another woman's, with another man's wife. But actually, he's not another man's wife. There is no marriage. And in fact, it's his own potency. And in fact, that man who thinks this is my wife, he's the one who's in violation of Krishna's proprietorship of his parts and parcel living entities and his expansions of his internal potency. They're poaching on Krishna's own. They're the debauchees. They're the unwholesome ones. They're the violators of Dharma. Transcendental. So we have this other Dharma that says religious marriage. It's and Krishna sanctifies it as well. So those of you that are married, don't feel bad. Because it's authorized by Scripture, through Scripture, the personality of God, that we should never go into the territory of she is my object of enjoyment, or he is the one that's meant to fulfill my desires for enjoyment. That's Maya. It's Maya. It's diluting potency. Rather, this is a facility given by Krishna for me to serve Krishna together and improve and elevate our consciousness together, helping one another, serving Krishna together. That's religious marriage from a Vaishnava point of view. And people that don't see that way, they get into this, struggle thing. Without elaborating, perhaps the counseling issues. I'm going down further. My book is page 69, the paragraph that begins. Again, such is the nature of the principle of the majesty that in the realm of Vaikuntha there is no rasa of parental affection towards the source of all avatars. But in Goloka, the seat of all super excellent deliciousness, there is no more than the original sentimental egoistic assumption of the same rasa. You got it? Languagey, but Vaikuntha, there is no parental affection towards Narayana. Who is Narayana's mother and father? There's no mother and father conception because he is seen as the original. The super excellence of Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan is he, for sake of variety of enjoyment of him and his devotees, he fills their heart with the sentiment, the sentimental assumption. Krishna is our son. And they enjoy parental affection. And he enjoys their parental love. Question. Otherwise, how would it be possible to have as above, so below? Where does parental affection come from? It comes from God. It comes from the realm of the absolutes. In that realm of the absolutes, there is this parental affection, which is absent in Vaikuntha. It's not to say, boo on Vaikuntha. It's to say, wow, I'm Goloka. It's super excellent. And not easily understood. And therefore 12 pages of purport. This kind of quickly, almost been done with this review. In reality, this is page 70 in my book, halfway down the page, just after speaking of the marriages of Abhimanyu and Govardhan Mala. These are Radha's husband and Chandravali's husband. Their names are mentioned. Bhaktisiddhanta writes, in reality there's no such separate entity as husbandhood of the gopis, either in Goloka or in Gokula. There are no husbands. In either place there's no husbands. One place it looks like there's husbands. But there's no husbands. Think about it. Do we ever hear about the gopis coming from their home and joining with Radha? They're always with Radha. They're not even home. They're with Radharani. Always. They have the names of their husbands are there. It's a sentimental assumption that they have their husbands. You get the picture. it's more of the same. That he going over, at least in my book, page 72, he touches on something that's interesting. That is, Jiva Goswami is stating two things. Jiva Goswami is stating, on the one hand, during the people of his time in Vrindavan, there were some Vaishnavas in Vrindavan that didn't like paramorship. They liked swakiya, or in marriage. So he wrote certain things, particularly in Gopal Champu, he wrote in support of Krishna's actually married, and there's marriages of the gopis with Krishna, you know, like that. Anyway, without the detail, sometimes, but he says, how can Jiva Goswami say something contrary to Rupa Goswami? So he said, it's a misunderstanding if you think that that's actually his conviction. He, Jiva Goswami, is a perfect follower of Rupa Goswami, and how can he have a different opinion? He also supports Parakya, or this understanding that Krishna has relationships outside of marriage. But then he explains it, Jiva Goswami explains it, it's the Vibhrama Vilas explanation, this only seeming, the sentimental assumption. Which is a different rasa than in marriage, and he uses this language of ownership. He touched on it yesterday. When one is married, I must serve my family. It's my religious duty because I'm married. Not like, you know, should I serve my family? I don't know. And supposing there isn't marriage, and then you just choose you want to serve another person. There's no ownership, or there's no commitment of the bond, the vows, and so forth. You serve another person, or you befriend another person. It's different. The mood. Anyway, so Krishna is in varieties of other enjoyment, and this is part of his enjoyment. He's married in Dwarka, and he has outside of marriage, Leela, in Vrindavan, which looks immoral to the mundane person that doesn't understand, haven't read from the Samhita. And there's another thing, and then we're done. The other thing for you. The other thing is, yes. The other thing is, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describe the same thing in a different way. And basically, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, don't get bent out of shape. Well, this one says this, and that one says that, and who's right, and take sides. I think that one's better. I think that one's better. He advises against that. He writes, there is, however, the element of mystery in their verbal controversies. Those whose judgment is made of mundane stuff, being unable to enter into the spirit of the all-loving controversies among pure devotees, due to their want of their own unalloyed devotion, are apt to impute to the devotees their own defects of partisanship and opposing views. And then down the next paragraph. Whenever any dispute arises regarding the pure cognitive pastimes, such as Goloka, etc., we would do well to remember the precious advice from the holy lips of Sriman Mahaprabhu and his associates, the Goswamis, namely, that the truth absolute is ever characterized by spiritual variegatedness that transcends the variegatedness of mundane phenomena. Semicolon, but he is in italics, never featureless. So Krishna's pastimes are variegated, like, you know, being bound around the waist by Mother Yasoda. He cannot be bound, and then he can be bound. He's a little boy, and then he can pull over the two Arjuna trees by toddling across the ground. He can exhibit potencies and withdraw those potencies. The variegatedness in the spiritual world is fully transcendental, of a complete absolute nature. It has nothing to do with mundane variegatedness. The mundane variegatedness is a perverted reflection of the spiritual variegatedness. We shouldn't compare the two. Different sets of rules as well. And, similarly, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or any other two perfect, perfected souls, the same pastime may strike their heart in a different way, and it's like, not like this one's right and that one's wrong. That may be true. You know, in the mundane sphere, there's right and there's wrong. In the absolute sphere, there's absolute. Everything is right. So it can be varieties of right amongst our acharyas. That's how we should view such things. If we use our college brain, we'll be perplexed. It's got to be this or that. It can't be this and that, because they're contradictory. You got the idea. That's how he ends the purport. Now I'm going to do a couple of things. That just add to this discussion. Okay. Yeah. I was asked at the end, what are the four defects of the conditioned souls? I mentioned one of them. B-H-R-A-M-A, the tendency to commit mistakes. What are the other three? Here they are. Pramada. You know that one. Tendency to be illusion. Vipravipsa. Tendency to cheat, Prabhupada explains, is, although I don't know, I make a statement as if I know. That's cheating. Another is commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. People say their own philosophy and say that's what Krishna said. That's cheating. They should write their own book that says what they say. Don't say Krishna says something he doesn't say. Don't put words in his mouth. When Krishna says, surrender to me, some commentator, Prabhupada read aloud, his commentary. Krishna does not mean to surrender unto him. Krishna means to surrender to the unborn manifest within him. As if, you know, Krishna doesn't know what he means. He says something else. What he really means is what he didn't say. He wants to surrender to something other than himself. He certainly can say that. It's cheating. Conditioned soul's defect. And karana patava, imperfect senses. So, this is a painting of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This question was also asked. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, mentioned in our purport, he writes extensive commentary on Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, and he explains that there's three categories. One, nityasiddha, like those were his direct expansions of Radha. There are those who become perfect, so that's jivas, who can become perfect by sadhana. Now what we're doing, we can become perfect and become a gopi. And then there's a procedure. where one takes birth, where Krishna is performing his earthly pastimes or worldly pastimes, we get trained up by the Nitya Siddha devotees and then continue eternally serving Krishna. But it's not like they have a pecking order. Oh, we're the Nitya Siddha gopis and you're only Sadhana Siddha. It's not like that. There's no envy. Siddha means Siddha, Prabhupada says. So there's not this. The distinction is for our purpose, not the pecking order in the spiritual world. Then there's another category, those who have attained bhava but are not yet perfect. And there's detail in this commentary, if you like, you can read in the Bhagavatam itself. But an example of this is there are some gopis who actually, of this third category, they actually were married, they actually did have relations with their husbands, they actually did have children, and when they were called by the sound of Krishna's flute, they were restrained from coming to join Krishna. And that feeling of intense separation and so forth purified them to the point where, according to the commentary of our acharyas, their bodies remained by the side of their husbands as if asleep, but in their spiritual body they went and joined Krishna's pastimes of rasa dance. So this is this third case, and there's more details. And here's this slide where Krishna, and in Krishna book, Prabhupada challenges the moralist, who's the adulterer? You recall that discussion? With this note. Okay. So, the wonderful pastimes of Radha and Krishna are the delight of the pure devotees and the puzzlement of the moralists. And for us, these faithful devotees, the explanations given by our great acharyas, they're sufficient for us to have full trust and confidence in Krishna's loving pastimes, enjoying with his own pleasure potency and expansions of his own pleasure potency. And the most exalted of all is the Rasa Leela performance. Certainly there's other leelas in which Krishna is enjoying, where he's at the center, famous and very popular and very delightful is our celebration of Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill, where not just the gopis were with Krishna, but all the residents of Vrindavan, uninterrupted, a big festival for the eyes to see Krishna, uninterruptedly for 7 days and 7 nights. Not only Krishna didn't eat or drink or sleep, they didn't either. They were just so completely ecstatic being with Krishna. And this is Govinda, this revelation about Govinda. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So, can you take us to the next set? Yesterday evening, this was text 37. We discussed 38. I'd like you to go to 39. So, what was 38? The Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena verse, where Bhakti Vilochanena, the eyes anointed with the salve of love of God, permits one to see Krishna eye to eye, as we're seeing one another now. Krishna, one can see Krishna eye to eye with that very special benefit So we also last night discussed this point of Krishna being the basis of everything. That's the section we're going to be discussing now. And so just a little review of the verse 39 that we discussed last night. Krishna is the source of all avatars. And there was, if you recall, some discussion about the four qualities. Richard Garanga was asking, the four qualities that Krishna has that Narayana or Vishnu don't have, he was asking, is it that they just don't exhibit them, but they have them? Well, and my answer was, no. Krishna expands, but he doesn't expand those four qualities within them. Those are exclusively with Krishna. So there's a very nice additional, like, say, scriptural support for this. There's a place in Chaitanya Charitamrita Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 5, verse 36. That's also discussed in by Rupa Goswami. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So Krishna is the original of all avatars. That's not being questioned. In the Vishnu Purana, as we mentioned yesterday evening, it's one of the primary Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana, especially Saptic Puranas that Sri Vaishnavas especially appreciate and revere as their authorities. In Vishnu Purana, there's a discussion between Maitreya and Parashramuni, because Parashramuni is the speaker. Just like in the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker. In Vishnu Purana, Parashramuni, the father of Vyasadeva, is the speaker. And he's speaking to Maitreya. Prabhupada refers to that section in his purport of Adi Lila, chapter 5, verse 36. Which reads, where it has been stated that the Lord's enemies and devotees attain the same destination, this refers to the ultimate oneness of Brahman and Lord Krishna. This may be understood by the example of the sun and the sunshine, in which Brahman is like the sunshine and Krishna himself is like the sun. So, this verse that we just read is a verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's Rupa Goswami and, you know, his nectar devotion, where he further discusses, as he does in Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Lagu Bhagavatamrita is a book that describes the forms of the Supreme Lord, his expansions. It's specific, Lagu Bhagavatamrita. very, very detailed, very informative extent. Krishna is the source of everything, and Krishna is the source of all expansions. And it does it four different ways. It's really an amazing text. There, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, as well as Raghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami makes reference to this section from Vishnu Purana, the fourth canto of Vishnu Purana, that goes like this, referenced in the purport. Maitreya asked Parashara with regard to Jayan Vijaya, how was it that Hiranyakashipu next became Ravana and enjoyed more material happiness than the demigods, but did not attain salvation? Although when he became Shishupal, he quarreled with Krishna and was killed, and he attained salvation and merged into the body of Lord Krishna. Parashara Muni replies that Hiranyakashipu failed to recognize that Lord Nrsingadev was Lord Vishnu. He thought Lord Nrsingadev was some living entity who had acquired such opulence by his pious activities. Being overcome by the mode of passion, he considered Lord Nrsingadev an ordinary living entity, not understanding his form. Nevertheless, because Hiranyakashipu was killed by the hands of Lord Nrsingadev, in his next life he became Ravana and had proprietorship of unlimited opulence. He got what he wanted, opulence, but not salvation. As Ravana, with unlimited material enjoyment, he could not accept Rama as the personality of Godhead. Likewise, he thought, he's a powerful person like me, so I can kill him because I'm more powerful. Therefore, although he was killed by Rama, he did not attain Sayujya, or oneness with the body of the Lord. In his Ravana body, he was too much attracted by Ram's wife, Janaki, and because of that attraction, he was able to see Lord Rama. But instead of accepting Lord Rama as an incarnation of Vishnu, Ravana thought him as an ordinary human being. When killed by the hand of Rama, therefore, he got the privilege of taking birth as Shishupal, who had such immense opulence that he could think himself a competitor to Krishna. Opulent, more opulent, even more opulent in successive births. Although Shishupal was always envious of Krishna, he frequently uttered the name of Krishna and always thought of the beautiful features of Krishna. Thus, by constantly thinking and chanting of Krishna, even unfavorably, he was cleansed of the contamination of his sinful activities. When Shishupal was killed by the Sudarshana Chakra of Krishna as an enemy, his constant remembrance of Krishna dissolved the reactions of his vices, and he attained his salvation by becoming one with the body of Krishna. So, continuing, Jiva Goswami points to this in his Krishna Sandarbha, that just see, this shows Krishna's superlative amongst Rama, Nrsingha, and those two. There's other verses that say they're endowed with the most of all the potencies, if you remember from yesterday's discussion. Well, let's do the yesterday's discussion. Oops. Each of the incarnations, we heard yesterday, they're endowed with specific potencies according to their position. Yeah. Kala Niyamena Tishtam. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, says that each of the incarnations, they display powers fixed according to the particular form. Remember that? Kala Niyamena Tishtam. So, there's verses that say that Rama and Nrisimha are imbued with the most of the Lord's potencies. But Krishna has more than the most, is what's being illustrated by Jiva Goswami in his Krishna Sandarbha. This is just related to yesterday evening's discussion. He writes, according to the descriptions of Vedic literature, although the enemies of the Supreme Lord attain liberation by constantly thinking of the Lord or by inadvertently serving Him in some capacity, like Putana, generally they do not at all, they do not all become liberated simply by associating with the Lord or being killed by Him. By killing or liberating these demons, Lord Krishna reveals His transcendental opulence greater than the opulences of any other form of the personality of Godhead. These statements are all confirmed by the explanations spoken by Parashara Muni and recorded in the Vishnu Purana. So next time you have one of those, you know, touchy discussions with someone about, well, who's supreme and all that, in their own authority, the Vishnu Purana, Parashara Muni states. Anyway. So our topic here is that Krishna, we'll do it this way. Krishna is the basis of everything. That was our summary of this section. Krishna is the basis of support of literally everything. So there were four verses in this section. Yesterday evening, Krishna is the source of all avatars. Now, hopefully I'll be able to finish, He's the basis of the Brahman effulgence. Krishna, the next is, He's the basis of all material existence. And then the final is, He's the basis of all rasa. Got it? Let's do the chanting of the verse. And hopefully we will go very quickly. Of the spiritual world, and in different places, this effulgence is ascribed to the body of Krishna. There's places where the effulgence in this verse is from the boundary walls of Vaikuntha. It's from the toenails of Krishna, from the ornaments of Krishna. In other words, the whole spiritual world is effulgent. And that effulgence has its basis in supporting Govinda. He and his effulgence are inseparable. He is the basis, the effulgence is from him. That's the message. And our translation, hopefully. Yeah. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. What happened? Whose effulgence is the source of the non-differentiated Brahman, mentioned in the Upanishads. Being differentiated from the infinity of glories of the mundane universe appears as the indivisible, infinite, limitless truth. So, here's a description two of them, where just like on the cover of Srimad Bhagavatam, it shows the spiritual sky is blue. So why is the spiritual sky blue? And the answer is because Krishna is blue. His effulgence is blue. This is a quote from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Brahman is all-pervading and eternal. The greatest sky, Mahakasha, is Para Brahman, the supreme person, Sri Krishna, with his dense, dark blue effulgence. So our painting, the cover painting, is a light blue, but the sky is actually a dark blue, according to Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And here, in this second quote, Prabhupada is explaining why the sky is blue. The sky is blue because the Brahmajyoti is blue, because Krishna is blue. That's why the sky is blue. Now, in eighth grade science, you learn something else. But in... Here's Prabhupada's writing. So, this is a class. This jyoti, this illumination, is beyond this material world. And because there is illumination, that illumination is reflected in the material world. You'll find the reflection. Blue is reflection in the sky. It means the Brahma Jyoti is bluish because it is coming out from the blue body of Krishna, therefore it is bluish. We see the sky bluish, and in darkness we see, although it is darkness, there is some brightness in the sky. Always the sky is. The sky is everywhere. But the covering is seven times covered by different types of material elements, and that Brahma Jyoti is penetrating through the covers. And little reflection we can see in the sky. So our sky and the universe, which is part of the sky, is within the Brahmajyoti. It's within the causal ocean, which was in the Brahmajyoti. So right now, we're in the Brahmajyoti, although we don't see it, because we're just seeing matter. But we're in the Brahmajyoti, because the Brahmajyoti has part of it is covered with a cloud of Mahatattva, and within the Mahatattva there's universes. Excuse me. Let's shut it off. So there's the vastness of the spiritual sky. Within the vastness of the spiritual sky, there's a cloud, and we're within one portion of that cloud. So that means we're in the spiritual sky. Yes? Anyone confused? Should I do it differently? Here we do it differently. Okay, we're going to get in an airplane. We're in an airport. Fasten your seatbelt, we're going to take off, going down the runway, zoom, zoom, zoom. Now we're off the ground, and we're in the sky. And if we're flying in the sky, above us there's the clouds, and we pass through the clouds. And you look out your window, what do you see? Clouds. And then you get above the clouds, then you see the sunshine, because even if it's clouds, above the clouds is sunshine. Now you're in the sky. So below the clouds, you're in the sky. Above the clouds, you're in the sky. And within the cloud, you're in the sky. But you don't see the sky, you see the clouds. Similarly, we're in the spiritual sky, but we're not seeing the spiritual sky because we're seeing the clouds. We're seeing the material energy, the cloud of the material energy, within the vastness of the spiritual sky. But we're in the spiritual sky. We're just relating to the clouds, or that which is floating in the sky. So where is our consciousness directed? Towards matter or towards spirit? And then there's the Supreme Spirit through medium of devotion and service and love, one can connect with the Supreme Person from whom the spiritual sky comes, within which is resting the material sky, which is blue. This is a reference that was made earlier. Why Krishna is blue? Remember that discussion? Because he's the reservoir of all colors. And you put all, mix all colors together and you get a darkish color. But then he adds, it's not material black, it's a transcendental shama. This is a form of the Supreme Lord. This is depicting a universal form, a particular depiction of it. But bluish, and as nice painting, this is Krishna beyond the clouds of the Mahatattva, but he's blue, and that radiance, the Brahman, is expanding through the clouds, just as Prabhupada said in that little past paragraph we read, through the clouds, through the coverings of the universe. So there's some illumination in the sky even at night, and when it's daytime, you can see that it's blue. So, now we're going on to the next one. Actually, the next two. We've covered, he's the source of avatars, he's the source of the Brahman effulgence, and now, Sattva Avalambi is, he's the support of all existence. We'll see in just a moment. And then he's the source and support of all rasa. See, there's this phrase in red letters, Sattva Avalambi. That's where our focus is going. Let's see if I can get that verse out. Okay, let us chant together, please.
Maya Hiyasya Jagaranda Sadani Sumhe Jai Bhunyata Nishara Veda Vitaya Mana Sattva Badamma Parasattva Vishuddha Sattva Govinda Vani Purusha Amaham Vajami Govinda Vani Purusha
I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. Beautiful painting. Who is the absolute substantive principle? Sattva Avalambi. Being the ultimate entity in the form of the support of all existence, whose external potency embodies the threefold mundane qualities, namely sattva, rajas, and tamas, goodness, passion, ignorance. Those are those three ladies at the top. One in yellow, that's goodness. The one in red, that's passion. One in blue, that's ignorance. And conducting the affairs of the conditioned souls. And, important, and diffuses the Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world. So the modes of nature, this verse is saying, diffuse the Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world. We touched on this twice already. I hope it's like going in. Because we think, certainly, I'm accustomed to thinking of the Vedas come from the Supreme Lord Narayana. It's the breathing of Narayana. So why is it not considered then transcendental? Answer: everything comes from Narayana. Including all material existence comes from Narayana. And that transcendental Veda regarding the mundane world is diffused through the modes of nature. They're not. The source is transcendental, but the knowledge doesn't take one to transcendence per se. It takes one to whatever the destination is that one has interest in, because the Vedas are a desire tree. It can give you the fruits of piety and so forth. It can give you sense gratification. And that section of the Vedas called the Agamas does not deliver knowledge of Krishna. We touched on this before. So the theme of this group of verses is Govinda is the basis and support of all existence. How do we understand this truth in terms of his material creation that this is exploring? And the answer is, he is the absolute substantive principle, or Vishuddha Sattvam, being the ultimate entity, that's him. The principle is Vishuddha Sattva. The person is Para Sattvam, and he supports all existence, the Sattva Avalambi. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's language. Let's go further, and hopefully this will be more clear. Govinda is the ultimate entity. Parasattvam or Paratattva, Parabrahman, he's the ultimate entity. So, in the Paribhasha Sutra, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. In this capacity as the ultimate entity, Govinda is the support of all existence. What does this mean? He's the support of all existence. Bhaktisiddhanta explains, via his internal potency, or chit-shakti. In this case, chit-shakti means all three, Satchitananda, his internal potency, or Vishuddha-sattva. Vishuddha-sattva. Vishuddha-sattva means unmixed goodness. No passion, no ignorance, unmixed goodness. That's the, from the earlier section, verse 3. The spiritual world is Vishuddha-sattva. Here's the modes of nature. There's no modes of nature. It's only Vishuddha-sattva. Unalloyed goodness. Which is the absolute substantive principle. Again, Ajita, you were asking about this language, substantive. So that's, you know, eternally existing, like sat. Substantive principle. Vishuddha Sattva. We'll go through it a few times, so it's hopefully fuzzy now, becomes clear in a moment. Vishuddha Sattva. Absolute substantive principle. Absolute, not relative. Substantive. It exists eternally. The principle of establishing that which exists eternally. That's part of Krishna's internal potency. He manifests the spiritual world. He manifests reality. that absolute sat principle is the basis of the material creation and the modes of nature. We'll see. Just be a little, continue to be a little patient. The modes of nature are shadow-like, perverted reflections of his Vishuddha Sattva. What does that mean? In the process of creation, if you recall, Mahavishnu, so there was a question of why creation, Mahavishnu is reclining in transcendental happiness, enjoying with his internal potency within Rama Devi in transcendental yoga nidra, transcendental slumber, not sleeping and snoring like we do. Transcendental enjoying within. The living entities are also within during the cosmic annihilation. They're within him. And he's contemplating these living entities. I wish that they could enjoy their ultimate happiness. But in this condition, they're not enjoying that happiness. I wish for them a desire. And compassionate desire. The happiness of those living entities. Let them experience their ultimate possible happiness. Second desire. This reflection of Rama Devi over there at some distance. She wishes some service. She's inclined to do some service, but she doesn't have any service. I'd like to give her some service to do. He just desires, compassionately, for her to have some service. What happens? Rama Devi, his internal pleasure potency, she knows the will of Mahavishnu. That's her master. She doesn't say anything. She's just desiring. But she knows his desire. And so she takes it upon herself to do that service that will assist him. What's that? She takes those living entities that are within the body of Mahavishnu and along with her time energy, she entrusts those living entities and the time energy to the glance of Mahavishnu. And the glance of Mahavishnu carries the living entities and the time energy into this sleeping reflection of Rama Devi. There's Rama Devi and her reflection, Chaya Devi in Sanskrit. So when that glance, the time energy in the living entities contact matter in its dormant state, the modes of nature become activated. The three, good, dispassion, ignorance. So the support for the good, dispassion, ignorance is the Lord's own transcendence. Yes? And she, the Maya, the external energy, is a reflection of his internal energy. She doesn't exist. The reflection doesn't exist minus the object. Maya doesn't exist minus Rama Devi. And the modes of nature are transformations of his three, we'll see in just a moment, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Specifically, eternality, well, this we'll go, there's a slide that has this little breakdown. Just try to explain this puzzling paragraph a little bit. Then, through this external potency, the modes of nature and matter being governed by the modes of nature, this external potency, through this external potency, the creation is extended. And Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world is diffused through the modes of nature. Everything coming from Govinda, including the Vedas. But in the process of creation, that which is related to the creation of, you know, how to be a better enjoyer and go to the heavenly planets and all of that. In a religious way, that's through the modes of nature. Question. What is this Vishuddha Sattva? Please explain it again or expand the explanation. I'm anticipating these questions. Answer. Vishuddha Sattva, which is also talked about in text 3, that is the spiritual world, Goloka, is Vishuddha Sattva. It's the nature of the spiritual world, namely, absolute, pure goodness, unmixed with the three modes. The constituents of Vishuddha Sattva are three. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Or Sandini, Sandit, and Vladini. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Question. What does Bhakti Siddhanta mean by the statement that the three modes, this mundane, goodness, passion, ignorance, are shadow-like, perverted reflections of his Vishuddha Sattva? Here's the answer. The perverted reflection of Sandini, his eternality aspect or substantive potency, is the mode of goodness. It maintains that. The perverted reflection of Samvit, or cognitive potency, perverted reflection is ignorance, tamagun. And the perverted reflection of Vladini, ecstatic enjoyment, is the mode of passion, the desire to enjoy material existence. The three modes of material nature, going back to the question above, this verse is saying, Bhakti Siddhanta is expanding it, the three modes of nature are shadow-like, perverted reflections of his Vishuddha Sattva. So there's the spiritual world, Vishuddha Sattva. In this world, Krishna is the basis in support of it, with some detail of some technology, how he does it. So this is now a little review. Hopefully we can put these pieces together and what was puzzling is more clear. What is Vishuddha Sattva, this absolute substantive principle? The answer is it's Satchitananda. It's like our first verse, Satchitananda Vigraha. As Krishna's Vigraha, his form, is made of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, the whole spiritual world is made of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's Vishuddha Sattva. The whole spiritual world is Vishuddha Sattva. There's no modes of nature there. It's absolute substantive principle. Then, how does each, this Satchitananda or Sandini, Savitladini, how do they manifest in the material world? As perverted reflections of these three, in respectively Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, or Sattva, Tamas, and Rajas. In this way, Govinda is the Sattva Avalambi, or the support of all existence. He doesn't have to do anything. He just has to compassionately desire living entities. They should have the opportunity to experience the fullness of consciousness. And that reflection of my internal potency, she should have some service to do. She wants to do some service. He just desires, and then voila. Now, in this, the last part of this verse, in the translation of the verse, is how the Vedas are diffused through those modes of nature. Now, you remember in text 33, I'm sure, Adurlabham Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atmabhakta. We've said it so many times. So, the Vedas, you read the purport carefully of text 33, and Bhakti Siddhanta says the same thing, which is the Vedas deal mainly with the three, Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. how to become an enjoyer if you're in the mode of ignorance. How to be an enjoyer if you're in the mode of passion. Come to the mode of goodness and do religious ceremonies according to these formulas that are presented through the modes of nature. So those literatures, by careful study of them, you're not going to understand Govinda. Vedeshu Durlabham. Adurlabham Abhabhaka. So there are portions of the Vedas that are imbued or invested with the Ladini, or pleasure, ecstatic pleasure potency. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Sri Brahma Samhita and other literatures of like that, Bhagavad Gita. Because it's the message of pure devotion. Krishna is being disclosed very clearly. And so those two potencies, Ladini and Sandit, or ecstatic potency and cognitive potency, those literatures can disclose. In this verse, Govinda's external potency diffuses the Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world. And in the purport, it is the deluding energy who has elaborated the regulative knowledge bearing the threefold mundane quality. Rise above the three modes of material nature, become transcendental to all of them. Same as in Bhagavad Gita, same as in text 33, same as here in text 41. Okay, it's already almost 9 o'clock. I have two more verses to go. No, one more. It's just one more. Two more. No, one more.
One more.
One more. So, text 42. And the translation, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose glory ever triumphantly dominates the mundane world by the activity of his own pastimes, being reflected in the mind of recollecting souls as the transcendental entity of the ever blissful cognitive rasa. So in the first line of the Sanskrit, we have the same language as previous. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. So, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Same as in 36. Here again in 41. Because rasa is conducted by these two. The Ananda potency, or Ladini potency, or his ecstatic potency, and his chit potency. Ananda Chit Maya awakens rasa. Krishna is the basis and support of everything, including rasa. In his language, Bhakti Siddhanta writes, Govinda ever triumphantly dominates the mundane world by the activity of his own pastimes. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a meaning of one of the names of Lord Chaitanya is Vishvambar. Vishvambar. Vishva means universe. Vishvambar, he, by Vishambharmi, by distributing love of God, because that's what Lord Chaitanya does, he distributes unlimitedly love of God. And as that love of God is distributed, it floods the world. That's what it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He broken open the storehouse of love of God and distributed its contents, and it began to flood everywhere. He distributed more, and it just increased and increased. So, similarly, Govinda and Lord Chaitanya triumphantly dominate over the mundane world by the activity of Krishna's all-attractive pastimes and the activity of glorifying Krishna's all-attractive pastimes and form and qualities. What are some examples? Well, in his pastimes, Krishna certainly dominated Kamsa. He was so powerful. One sako, Kamsa was finished. Or Agasura, sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. He transcendentally eliminated the viciousness of Agasura by entering into the mouth of Agasura, who then chomped his jaw down, and then Krishna just expanded his body bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. He suffocated. Krishna subdued the pride of Indra by his wonderful pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill. Krishna subdued the enviousness of Kaliya by dancing upon his hoods. His own pastime being reflected in the mind of recollecting souls as the transcendental entity of cognitive rasa. That's how the verse ends, and we're almost done. But there's some examples of this, particularly through chanting. In one of our Acharya's writings, it compares, it indicates, this is a question that comes up kind of regularly, when we're chanting, should we be thinking of Krishna's pastimes or the deity form or something or something? And the answer is, according to Haridas Thakur, when we're chanting, we're supposed to be focusing on chanting. And then from chanting, the name of Krishna will become, the form of Krishna will become revealed from within the name. And then the qualities of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna in sequence. Because everything is within the name. That's means for us for this age. So this metaphor is given. Very nice. When you're chanting, you can consider this metaphor. The name is like an ocean of nectar. And you enter properly into the name, you're entering into the ocean of nectar. Within that ocean, there's waves. And you don't have to like, where's the waves? When you're in the ocean, the waves come. And the form of Krishna from within the name. It's not like over there's a wave when you're in the ocean. It's part of the ocean. So it's not like over there is the form of Krishna while I'm chanting the name. It's within the name. If you chant properly, according to our acharyas. And then when seeing the form of Krishna, of course, ecstatic, but then the qualities of Krishna become revealed through his form. And that's described in this metaphor as the small waves. There's big rollers and there's smaller waves. And then when the two mix, the big waves, small waves mix, that's his pastimes. Just from the name, just plunge into the ocean of nectar of the holy name. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani gives another comparison. It's poetic, it's a metaphor, but it's inspirational and very helpful. He compares a flower growing and then forming a bud, so the name is like the bud, and then the bud opens. So the Lord's holy name is like a freshly sprouted bud of a flower. So think in or picture in your mind. Just the beginning stage of a flower. That's the holy name. We know there's something coming after that when the bud comes. From bud comes this, the form of the flower starts to manifest as Krishna's form starts to manifest. And then there's a fragrance that comes. That's the qualities of Krishna. And then when the bud fully blooms, then that's the pastimes of Krishna. So we don't need to worry about thinking about Krishna's form or his pastime. We think about the holy name, the bud. And it will manifest. Just stay focused on the name. And all sequentially, by divine arrangement, everything else will follow. Like this nice example of Draupadi. When in distress, Dushasana was trying to disrobe Draupadi in the public assembly. She was a powerful lady. She held on to her sari. But Dushasana was more powerful. So her sari was slipping from her hand. So, with both hands raised in the air, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda," is the only resort or shelter in this circumstance. "Please protect me." So Krishna appeared from that sincere calling, and as we see from the painting, Krishna supplied unlimited sari, and Dushasana got worn out, tried to take her sari off. By Krishna's unlimited power, in response to Draupadi calling Krishna's name so sincerely. And that's the end, I think. Yeah, that's the last slide. So we just finished that section. Krishna is the basis and support of everything. I'll commend you, your patient audience. And some advice from one of the attendees yesterday is, don't take a big breakfast. Because after breakfast, it might be hard to be attentive. And I've got to cover 3 verses after breakfast. So, and after, we'll start another section altogether. You'll see. Assemble again. Any comments or questions? Cool. Okay.
Audio. I think in the early pastimes of Lord Narayana and Lord Shiva, like he seems to have Vakula Devi as his mother.
Seems to have what?
Vakula Devi is his mother, and he enjoys having a relationship with his mother. Because in one of the purports of Vishuddhanta said that Lord Narayana and
Vaikuntha,
there is no territorial affection.
Well, this is a pastime of Krishna, isn't it?
I thought it was Lord Narayana who was kicked in the chest, and then he comes down to meditate as Lord Shiva.
But he's coming as Krishna, no? Yes.
It's like what I heard was Mother Yashoda.
Mother Yashoda could not witness the wedding of Krishna. So the next pastime, Mother Yashoda came as a Bakula Devi so that she can do the wedding of Srinivasa. So
behind you, right behind you.
We wanted to ask a comment and a question. The poetry of the Brahma Samhita is so beautiful, and the sound of love. The poetry of the Brahma Samhita is so beautiful. Blooming lotus eyes, the sound of love, and also just the poetry of our acharyas translating the commentary as well, the words as well, the verses of our and Srimad Bhagavatam. I just wanted to comment on the beauty of the poetry. And question, the last slide you showed, Draupadi. So, you know, very natural tendency to hold on to the sari, you know, in the shashram.
Sure.
So, you know, and then she takes that leap of faith to let go and just put her hands up in the air. Would you please comment on what it takes to take that leap of faith in those distressful situations?
Well, like Gajendra, in some circumstances there's no option. He fought. Draupadi held on to her sari. They did, you know, the intelligent thing. And at some point, there isn't an alternative. That's in our worldly circumstance. Like, you know, even in Vrindavan, when Nanda Maharaj was being swallowed by the giant serpent at night, the cowherd boys got sticks from the fire and started beating the serpent, beating the serpent, beating the serpents. They kept swallowing Nanda Maharaj. And then, Krishna, we made, so it's circumstantial. It comes one circumstance to another when they come to that position where any practical activity I can do isn't going to bear any fruit. There's only one thing. So it's not in all circumstances we just throw our hands up in the air and say, some questions over on the men's side. You want to do your online? Go ahead.
There are three questions, Maharaj. Can I go off?
Okay, sure.
Okay, the first one is from Virajita Singh Mataji. She asks, how can we in conditioned state genuinely desire to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna?
Well, in a conditioned state, we're not. But we can cultivate. And we cultivate following the examples of those that are in that position.
The second question is, do sadhana siddha gopis reach perfection of their sadhana while desiring to serve as gopis, or that is their constitutional position and they reach perfection of sadhana in that position?
It's like the rising of the sun is gradual. It's not like, you know, I'm over here in the conditioned state and I'm pulling on my chin saying, gee, I'd like to be a sadhana siddha gopi. Not how it works. So, one may evolve to that position depending upon, you know, Krishna's desire and one's natural position and other circumstances, association and many other circumstances. It evolves, and so one may be a sadhana siddha gopa, or one may be a sadhana siddha cow, or, you know, depending upon all these variables. Go ahead.
And the last question is from Lileshwari Mataji. She asks, how do we continue the loving and serious mood to reach love for Krishna, inspired by these few days after the seminar when mind and conditioning takes over?
Go back and listen again. Chant good job. Yeah.
We've been talking about how the Samvit and Ragini Shaktis or potencies, they inspire a person to go to different stages of involvement.
Yeah.
So how does the Samvit potency influence or affect the perfected souls?
It illumines them. Krishna does things through his potencies, like, you know, super soul within the heart, or, you know, how does Arjuna know to do what Arjuna knows what to do, samdhi potency. He influences according, you know, respectively to his devotee and their circumstance.
Because the reason the question came up yesterday, you showed the picture of Mother Yashoda tying Krishna.
Yeah.
And in that Bhagavatam verse, the particular word was matva atmajam.
Yes.
So she has no sense of that this is God.
No sense.
But the Samvit then illumines her in different ways.
Yes. And Krishna enjoys that more than one who sees him as God. So he, because she has that capacity of purity, he inspires her heart in that way. As any one of us, however, our heart becomes inspired, is inspired. We're dependent upon Krishna for everything. Yes?
So, the theme for this section is that Krishna is the basis and support of all existence?
Yes.
So how does verse 42 relate to that history?
How does verse 42 do what?
How does verse 42 relate to the section?
How does verse 42 relate to this section? That Krishna is the basis and support of all existence?
How does it not? I don't understand the question.
Because in the previous verses, there's direct like mention that in verse 39 it says Krishna is the source of all incarnations.
He's the basis of all. The Sanskrit of the verses begins Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Ananda means bliss. Chinmaya or Chit Maya is cognitive, and rasa is rasa, mellow or enjoying with Krishna. Krishna is the basis of that. It's his potency that enables that to be. We're a spirit soul. We're dependent on Krishna's energies for material or spiritual happiness. He's the basis of that rasa. That's the connection. Yes? Go ahead.
The Tribhanga form of Lord Krishna, what is the significance of that?
The which form?
Tribhanga form.
Tribhanga?
Yeah.
He enjoys. That's the significance. It's very attractive. And he's inspiring the happiness of his devotees.
Yeah, I had a question, Maharaj. So
it's like, you know, like Michael Jackson dancing on stage. He's entertaining the audience. They like the Michael Jackson dance. Krishna's Tribhanga, he's enlivening his devotees. They don't like the Michael Jackson. Go ahead.
So how should we explain Krishna's relationship with the devotees to a non-devotee? Context is, there's an uncle of mine who asked me this question several years ago, and I wasn't able to answer that very well.
Restate the question slowly.
How should we explain Krishna's relationship with the gopis to a non-devotee, to a, you know, who's not?
Well, it depends on the non-devotee. I mean, how would I explain it to my sister? To my sister. No. When we worship God, we recognize there's God and his spiritual energy. He's not alone. He's energetic, and there's his energy. And then his energy expands to expand his happiness. And when Krishna is enjoying with the gopis, it's his own energy who he's enjoying with. And she might say, well, that's interesting. I don't think she would say, well, no, here's my moralistic yardstick and I don't like it. Some people might say that. It depends on the person. Yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm a seed giving father. But in the Vrindavan pastime, we never, even in the Vatsalya Rasa, we don't say Krishna giving the father.
Even the witch has to speak slowly. Even in the?
In the parental Rasa.
Parental Rasa.
We don't see Krishna taking, at least I've not heard of Krishna taking the form of father or having children or. So
of course he does.
In Vrindavan.
He had wives, and each wife he had 10 sons. But in Dwarka.
Yeah. But in Vrindavan, that is not there.
That's correct. It's not there. So what?
Okay. I just want to know if that is the case or.
Anyway, but when Krishna is saying, I'm the seed giving father, means something other than his having children. If you one day you may become a parent, or someone may become a parent. May someone one day become a parent. And when that happens, that's their, you know, the seed giving father. That's the mundane example. But for Krishna, all living entities, he's the father. He doesn't have to have wives to be the seed giving father. He's the source of all those living entities. He's the seed giving father. From the body of Mahavishnu comes all the living entities. He's the seed giving father.
So it is not Krishna's preferred mood for enjoyment in the Vrindavan pastimes. Is that why it's not there?
No. It's just it's totally irrelevant. Can you help him? Not now, later. Thank you. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I got a little confused with the part where the husbands are a conception for the gopis. And the question I have is, so then these pastimes that we hear about Radharani walking out as Subala holding the calf, or Jatila, I mean, Abhimanyu being, you know, hit with a broomstick, nice mother. So I missed that part. Like, are these also like a feeling or a conception? Or bhava just to aid the pastime?
As opposed to what?
Or did they happen in the earthly realm and they don't happen in Goloka?
There's no Abhimanyu in Goloka. There's no husband of Radharani. There's the sense that there's no husband of Radharani or any of the gopis. And here, there's the sense that there's a husband, but there, practically speaking, there's no marriage. But there's the bhava that they're married. So, you know, and she, Radha, is living in the home of Jatila, Abhimanyu's mother. You know, like the extended family program. And there's Katila, the sister of Abhimanyu. Radharani, her so-called husband. There's the pastime like that. Now, does that answer your question?
So these pastimes happen in this Leela, when they come here?
It's a pastime. Yes, it happens. And we narrate the pastimes that happen. But the sense that the issue here is Radharani married? And the answer is no. There's the bhava and the sense that she's married, but it's a vilas, a pastime of vibhrama. Vibhrama vilas. Pastime of singing era. Okay?
Thank you. May I ask one more question?
Yes, sure.
So, these four verses that we discussed is that Krishna is the sustainer, he's the cause. Krishna is the sustainer, he is the cause, the entire, everything is, even the rasas and everything.
Sattva Avalambi, okay.
Yes. But still, the living entity, we have this strong illusion that, you know, I am the sustainer, everything is happening, I am the cause.
Sure.
And how to
get over that?
Yes, how to?
Krishna consciousness. By the process of devotion, Krishna consciousness, it's gradual. So we have knowledge and devotion, and it's the combination we do. we can forget the cleansing, the receiving in that cleansed condition, incrementally growing. The bhakti seed, bhakti lata bija, is given and we cultivate it gradually, gradually. The material conceptions fall away and the spiritual conception evolves. And the spiritual taste and the material taste dissipates. The light comes on, the darkness goes. The rising of the sun. Gradually.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is Krishna just leaving us to the law of karma, or he's taking care of us?
He's taking care of us.
Is our choice to be a devotee of Krishna, or is his choice?
It's our choice. He's inviting us. Please. But he doesn't force. Please come to me. It's in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's inviting us. And then we're making free will choices. Yes, no, or maybe. Or maybe 20%. But I like the other 80%. No, so proportionate to our saying yes, we're within the internal potency. That's the spiritual world, this internal potency. And if we don't say, we say no, then there's another place for us. We don't go out of existence, we go into Maya. The deluding potency, according to the modes of nature, I'm finding happiness through intoxication, I'm finding happiness through making money, or I'm finding happiness from being a scholar, or I'm finding happiness from something in the modes of nature. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Same thing as Lakshmi Mataji when she was talking about, so Vibhrama Vilas. Is every pastime is Vibhrama Vilas, or just with the husbands and conception of them?
The answer is, where it is not so, it seems that it is so. Those are the ones. So like Mother Jasoda, when she's feeding Krishna, she's not imagining that she's feeding Krishna. She's feeding Krishna. And Krishna's accepting the food from Mother Jasoda for cooking in Radharani's cooking. But to think specifically, rasa-wise, this child was born for me. That is Vibhrama Vilas. That's all.
And another thing, Maharaj, I was thinking that one time you said here that in Golok there is full moon, full sun to increase the pastimes and everything.
Yes.
So is there a time factor also there?
Interesting question. The answer is yes and no. Not as we know it, but the way that in Bhakti Siddhanta's language is coming up. But in Bhakti Siddhanta's language in Brahma Samhita, there's not time for even the passing of a moment, because time as we know it destroys things. But there's no destruction. Things are eternal. So there's another kind of time, and that's eternal time. And it's lila time, that means like night time. And then morning time to herd the cows. That's the signal for the cowherd boys. Get ready, and the cows can moo and wag their tails and get ready for going out to herding with Krishna and the cowherd boys. And then the residents of Vrindavan are going, oh, Krishna's leaving to go to the forest. It's time is for moving the hearts and the loving dealings between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. For that purpose, time is there. But not the kind of time that destroys things, makes people old, and not like that.
Maharaj, I was thinking one more thing. as you mentioned that in Narasimha Dev, Lord Rama and Lord Krishna is the most...
It's the verse that says that.
Right. Now, I was thinking Jaya and Vijaya. After all the three births, Shishupal got the Sahajya Mukti. He didn't get the personal association of the Lord just by one mistake. And then I was correlating it with the Kazi and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's...
Very good.
And there Kansa was the associate, he is against, he is taking the name of Krishna, but in every pastime he is coming. But Shishupal, is there no chance?
No chance for what?
Coming, because he has...
For coming where?
Coming with Krishna, he is merged in the body of Krishna, so which we call it as a spiritual suicide.
Yes. And but at the same time, his material existence, not temporarily finished, but finished, because from that position of Shishupal, then he resumed his position as Jayant Dichai. That was the promise.
So he received that position.
Yeah, but first, you know, because, question, can you go back to Godhead without devotion? Answer, no. If you question, then what's the liberation where there is no devotion to Krishna? Answer, Sayujya. So, how can someone merge into the body of Krishna, go back to Krishna, and service, like, you know, giant gatekeepers? Lord Chaitanya came for that purpose. Isn't that nice? Our logical brains have a problem sometimes. But it's to assist Jai and Vijay to return from the position of merging to the position of back as the gatekeepers of Vishnu. The Lord makes an arrangement. He's very kind. It's his arrangement. So they can go back to their post of servant. They're very confidential servitors, Jai and Vijay. They're not my fellows, you know, kind of ordinary fellows. They desired, they prayed for Lord Vishnu, our dear Lord. We know that you like chivalrous combat, but who can be a suitable combatant for you? If you so desire, we'll take that position. He fulfilled their desire, and he brought them back. Okay. That's how these things happen. So don't worry.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, just a minute, over here. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, where were Jay and Vijay in between jhanas?
Listen, I've researched that question and I've not come up with a clear answer. Kind of like a suspended animation. But where that is, I don't know. There's time passed in between. They went somewhere. So I've not found a clear answer to that question. Yes? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So you said that there are three types of gopis. One is Nitya Siddhas, one is Sadhana Siddhas, and one on Bhava stage.
Yeah.
So, is there a chance to be a Kripa Siddha Gopi?
Okay, chance to do what?
Can it be a Kripa Siddha Gopi?
Sure.
Is that Sadhana Siddha?
Sure. So, in that same category. Sure. Two more questions we're going to end. Three questions. Go ahead. You got to have practice.
So, Maharaj, follow up on the same question. Jai Vijaya. So, it was said that Vishnu gave them three opportunities to take as demons, but then here we see that they came as Jaya and Vijaya. That is their fourth birth. So how do we? So Jaya and Vijaya were cursed to take birth as a demons. So three times they will take birth as a demon, right?
Yeah.
First as Ravana, Kumbhakarna, then.
Yeah.
So now we also hear that they came back as Jaya and Vijaya. They came as Jaga and Madal,
yeah,
in their fourth birth. So
that's just, it's a college question. And the college answer is, that the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are the same. The Leela is different, but the pastime is the same. The persons in Krishna's Leela have their counterparts in Gaura Leela, and vice versa. The nap doesn't equal.
Like guys. So we may accept that, but the Sri Vaishnavas may not.
Oh, let them. We're not in a wrestling match, an arm wrestling match with someone.
Thank you,
Maharaj. Okay.
Any other
questions? Hare Krishna, Maharaji. In one of the slides, it was mentioned that sky has a covering of the 7 material elements. I'm aware
of. I don't know if you're quoting it correctly, but go ahead.
So, it was written that the sky is everywhere and it is covering of the 7 material elements.
Well, let's, we look up in the sky. There's some trees out there, it stops snowing. And then above the trees there's the sky, and then there's the clouds, and there's above the clouds, and keep going and going and going, and you get the coverings of the universe. So the sky is within the coverings of the universe, and there's 7. And beyond the coverings of the universe, on the other side, there's the river Pirajan, and then there's the Brahmajyoti, and all of that's within the Brahmajyoti. So now, what's your question?
Okay, so I was thinking that the Panch Bhuta, which I know, that is a part of elements, and 2 I'm not aware of.
Panch Bhuta are the elements, and something you're not aware? I couldn't follow this.
There are 7 coverings in the universe. He knows 5 of them, he doesn't know what the other 2 are.
Oh, that's what you want to know? What's the identity of the 7, the other 2 coverings?
That's right.
False ego and mahatattva. That's my memory. I'll check. Brihat Bhagavatamrita has the list, very clear. And I'll do the research during breakfast, and we'll come back right after breakfast, and I'll let you know after researching it.
Thank you, Alex. May I continue with one more?
I don't know.
In one of the slides, the Sattva, Rajas and Tamas were the 3 movements holding the 3 different colors, yellow, red and blue.
Yes.
So the red and blue are the same signifies here as the Tamas and Rajas and material world?
No. Well, wait a minute. There's no modes of nature in the spiritual world. Those 3 colors are of the material world. Are we in agreement? So then, can you say a question again? There's the Vishuddha Sattva has its 3 parts or components: eternality, knowledge, and bliss. The reflections, perverted reflections, find themselves as the modes of nature, and each corresponding with one of the eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Now, what's your question?
So that color doesn't signify that.
No, the color doesn't signify anything.
Yes, that's not.
Yes. Mode of goodness, color, material mode of goodness, color, is yellow. Material mode of goodness, color, mode of passion, is red. Mode of ignorance, blue. As with the 3 primary colors, you can make all other colors. You mix the modes of nature, you get all varieties. In that sense, it's not meaning something, it's just as there are primary colors, there's also modes of nature of corresponding coloration, thus color. Okay. Go ahead.
Everything that is found in the material world is a perverted reflection of what is found in the spiritual world. And my understanding was that except for envy, which is not found in the spiritual world, everything else that exists in the material world, its original prototype is in the spiritual world. So So I've been confused because we've been hearing of many other things, like, you know, there's a conception of marriage, there's a conception of husbands, of birth, of, you know, demons, but they're not actually existing in the spiritual world.
So I'm waiting. What's the punchline?
So apparently there's more than just envy that doesn't actually exist in the spiritual world.
I don't understand this question. Do you understand the question?
A little bit, I think.
A little bit, you think? No. He has a relationship, you know, may know what it's like ticking inside.
Everything in the material world.
Microphone? Go ahead, speak.
Yeah, everything in the material world has its original counterpart in the spiritual world.
And apparently envy doesn't exist in the spiritual world.
I heard that.
So, but it seems like in the material world there is husband-wife relationship, and it should, unless she thought that there should be the spiritual counterpart, that there should be spiritual husband-wife.
There's a spiritual counterpart. Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are husband and wife. There's a spiritual counterpart. It's specific to the relationship of Krishna with gopis in Parakya Rasa. There is Parakya Rasa here. There's, you know, men go and cheat on their wives, and women go and cheat on their husbands. It goes on. And there's the spiritual counterpart. But it's the semblance of that only, not the real. This is the perverted reflection of that. Does that answer your question? See the Prabhupada teeth?
Okay.